Good morning, members. I'm going to call this meeting of the State Government Finance and Elections Committee to order February 9th, 2021. And pursuant to House or to Rule 10.01, we are holding this meeting remotely. The legislative assistant will take the roll.
Chair Nelson?
Here.
Vice Chair Carlson?
He's excused. He's presenting a bill in another committee till.
Representative Nash?
Present.
Representative Bonner? Representative Drazkowski?
Present.
Representative Elkins?
Present.
Representative Greenman?
Present.
Representative Cleburne?
Present.
Representative Kosnick?
Present.
Representative Mason? Representative New Brindley? Representative Pulowski?
Pulowski present.
Representative Klom?
Present.
A quorum is present.
Thank you, Ms. Freck. We have the minutes from February 4th, 2021. Representative Greenman, did you get a chance to look at the minutes?
I did, and I moved the minutes.
Representative Greenman moves approval of the minutes from February 4th, 2021. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Yeah, the minutes have been approved. Members, today we have presentations from the three minority councils and also from the Minnesota Council of Indian Affairs. And we will start our presentation with the Minnesota Council of Indian Affairs. Ms. Gishick, are you here now? And if you want to please identify yourself for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Nelson and members. My name is Shannon Gijik. I'm an enrolled member of the Boys Fort Band of Chippewa and the Executive Director of the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council. I did submit a PowerPoint, and I'm wondering if we are able to display that at this time.
Ms. Spreck, are we able to do that, or can you share that with your... Ms. Gesha, can you share that from your computer?
You should be able to share from your computer. There's a share screen button at the bottom of the screen. And if not, I can share it from my computer.
Why don't you do that, Sydney? Why don't you share it if you got it?
Okay. I'll pull it up quick.
Here we go.
Wonderful. Thank you. As I was saying, good morning. Thanks for having me. My name is Shannon Gijik. I am an enrolled member of the Boys Fort Band of Chippewa and the executive director for the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council. I also have with me today Dylan Gage, who is a field investigator in our cultural resource unit, who would be able to answer any questions related to cultural resources. So here we have a picture of the symbolic signing of Governor Walz's Executive Order 1924 at a MIAC board meeting. And I'll talk a little bit about the order, the executive order later. Next slide, please. Our mission at the Indian Affairs Council is to protect the sovereignty of the tribal nations who share geography with the state of Minnesota and ensure the well-being of all American Indian people within the state. Slide. There are 11 tribal nations that consist of 4 Dakota communities, Lower Sioux, Prairie Island, Shakopee, Mattawakaton, and Upper Sioux community, and 7 Ojibwe communities. 6 of which comprise the Minnesota Chippewa tribes, Boys Fort, Grand Portage, Fond du Lac, Mille Lacs, Leech Lake, and White Earth. Red Lake is also an Ojibwe tribe, but is separate from the MCT. Next slide, please. Information on the 11 tribal nations can be found on the MIAC website, such as history of the tribes, and then contact information for leadership, as well as a wealth of other information. It's a great resource for state agencies and also the public. Next slide, please. Oh, yeah, here we go. This map that was showing, the map of the tribal nations shows that the Ojibwe nations are located in the northern part of the state and the Dakota communities south of the Twin Cities area. MIAC was established in 1963. Through state and tribal partnership, and is the first council of its kind in the nation. So Minnesota's got some bragging rights. Our authority exists under Minnesota Statute 3.922. MIAC is the official liaison between the tribes and the state. We work with and are a resource for and share information with state agency tribal liaisons. We're also a resource for state legislators. We alert tribes to legislation that may impact their constituency. MIAC also helps organize and propose the annual Governor's Tribal Summit. Okay, can you skip 2 slides, please? Thank you. So our executive board Our executive board consists of elected tribal leadership with President Marshall Lower C. Sue as our board chair and President Shelley Buck of Prairie Island as our vice chair. We have a current vacancy grant and contract department, which we are advertising for currently and hope to fill soon. We have 2 full-time staff in our cultural resource department, and we're working to finalize bringing 2 more staff on board in order to work in our cultural resource unit. Our operating budget is $560,723. There's a slide that showed our agency makeup.
Ms. Gishick, are you here?
Can you hear me?
It's been a little funky, but we can hear you now.
Okay.
No, we can't.
Our executive board. Yeah, we're behind in the. Okay. Slide back that membership. Are you able to hear me, Mr. Chair?
I can hear you now, but there's been some reverb. I don't know if you got 2 computers on or what, but I'm hearing some reverb when you're talking.
Okay, I do not have 2 computers on. I'm on a laptop currently.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. So our executive board consists of the elected tribal leadership. President Sue, President Larson of Lower Sioux is our board chair, and President Shelley Buck is our vice chair of Prairie Island. There's 12 agency representatives that sit on our non-voting board. Currently, all the agency commissioners sit. One governor's office representative, who is currently Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. Two senators appointed by its subcommittee on committees, and currently Senator Utke and Senator Torres Ray sit on our board, as well as two House members. Representative Erdahl is a longstanding member on our board, and then newly appointed Representative Keeler. They are appointed by the Speaker of the House. The Urban Indian Advisory Board is a subcommittee of the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council. It is a six-member board that is tasked with identifying urban Indian issues, makes recommendations, and shares information. They're representatives in urban areas with high Native American Indian populations, two for Minneapolis, two for St. Paul, one for Bemidji, and one for Duluth. They meet quarterly and provide reports to the MIAC Executive Board. Next slide, please. As I mentioned earlier, we are currently growing our cultural resource department. Minnesota was one of the first states in the nation to collaborate with tribal nations in the protection and preservation of American Indian human remains and burial sites. Our cultural resource department works under Minnesota Statute 307.08, the Private Cemeteries Act, Minnesota Statutes 138.31, and Public Law 101-601, and I see that there's a typo there, but it's the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act. MIAC works closely with the Office of State Archaeologists to protect American Indian gravesites and burial mounds statewide. We also oversee the osteology lab housed at Hamline University, the only of its kind in the state. MIAC recently added a layer to the OSA portal to assist in identifying places of significance or known burial sites. Next slide, please. This is a picture of a traditional Ojibwe burial site. Next slide. MIAC oversees funds appropriated from the Legacy Amendment and is a re-grantor for a Dakota and Ojibwe Language Preservation and Revitalization Program. MIAC was granted right around $3.4 million in fiscal years 20 and 21 to administer and award language grants. There were three distinct appropriations, one to tribal nations, one for immersion schools, and then one in a competitive grant pot. There are actually 46 grants. The figure there is incorrect. There are 46 grants that MIAC administers currently. MIAC also oversees the Dakota and Ojibwe Language Working Group with delegates from tribal nations and urban communities. Next. If you've been to the more remote parts of the state, where many of the tribal nations are located, you may have seen dual language signs. MIAC, MnDOT, and White Earth partnered several years ago and erected the first dual language sign in the state with our grants program support. Since then, many other dual language signs have popped up. Next. MIAC owns and lends out a copy of the White Treaties Matter traveling exhibit. I won't say too much here, but to mention that there is a permanent display in the state capitol on the third floor, I believe. And if you'd like more information, there is the www.treatiesmatter.org website that you can check out. I'm going to breeze through the last several slides in the interest of time. So the important things to note on this slide here is that the executive order was authored with input from the tribal nations, MIAC, and the state agency or tribal liaisons. In a nutshell, the executive order calls for meaningful and timely consultation between the state of Minnesota and the Minnesota tribal nations to facilitate better understanding and informed decision making by allowing for collaboration on matters of mutual interest and to help establish mutually respectful and beneficial relationships between the state and the tribes. Next slide, please. Part of the executive order instructs certain state agency leadership and employees to take tribal-state relations training. Next. The tribal-state relations training is a partnership between MnDOT, UMD, MIAC, and the Tribal Nations. It's an awesome training that won a state government, the State Government Innovation Award in 2016. Next. Goals of the training are to educate state employees about American Indian people and sovereign tribal governments, create unique, mutually beneficial partnerships, build respectful relationships between the state and the tribal nations, and also to create an enduring commitment by the state to learn about tribal governments. Next, please. Last thing I'm going to mention about the executive order is that it directs each state agency to designate a tribal liaison. Yep, thank you. Next, please. This slide here just indicates that our website has all of the contact information for the tribal nations. Our website really has a wealth of information, and I would encourage folks with questions to take a look at it. And next, please. Here's a picture of formal tribal state relations training because folks like pictures and PowerPoints. I'm just kidding. And with that, I'm done with my presentation. Miigwech, thank you for your time this morning, and I can stand for questions if time allows.
We can probably take a couple questions here, then we can move on to our next presentation. Are there any questions? I don't see any hands going up here quickly. With that, if you can hang around, maybe there'll be some questions at the end. Thank you for your presentation, Ms. Gishwick. And I know I'm butchering your name. The next presentation we have is from the Council of Asian Pacific Minnesotans. And the Executive Director, Seher, is here to give a presentation. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Mr. Chair, I just want to confirm that I have about 10 to 15 minutes, correct?
That's what we're trying, yes.
All right. So what I'm going to attempt to do is I'm going to actually share my screen so that I have a little bit more control over my screen.
That works. Thank you.
My PowerPoint presentation, actually. All right. So members of the committee, actually, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for your time this morning. For the record, my name is Sia Her, and I am the Executive Director of the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans. And this morning, I have with me our Board Chair, Mr. David Maeda, as well. So Mr. Maeda will be available to field any questions from the committees at the end of my presentation. In the 10 to 15 minutes allotted to me, Mr. Chair, members, I plan to provide you with an overview of our council. And given that this is the committee with jurisdiction over our budget, my presentation will cover the following. One, our council statutory roles and responsibilities. Two, the community of Minnesotans we seek to advise you and the governor about, and in doing so, advocate on behalf of. Three, how we go about delivering on our statutory responsibilities. And four, why we believe you should support the governor's recommendation where our next biennial budget is concerned. So I'll start off by giving a brief overview of the history of our council. Our council was created by this body, the legislature, in 1985 in response to a fast-changing Asian Pacific Minnesotan community. In the early 1980s, the Asian Pacific Minnesotan community was estimated to be about 26,000 strong, making us less than 1% of the total Minnesota population. 10 years prior to the creation of our office in the summer of 1975, recall that Laos and Vietnam had fallen to communism. Consequently, the 1970s and 80s saw an influx of refugees into Minnesota. These refugees came from Laos, Vietnam, and Cambodia, and the majority of these were the Hmong. So the newcomers of the 1970s and 1980s were grief-stricken, traumatized, and disoriented refugees who had left behind war-torn countries. Language barriers, weather barriers, and cultural shock were just some of the many challenges these refugees faced in their new home. The need for a nonpartisan state agency that could help to bridge the distance between state government and the growing Asian Pacific Minnesotan community then prompted the creation of our council. In 2015, the legislature sought to clarify the ethnic councils, which consists of our council, the Latino Affairs Council, and the African Heritage Council. The legislature sought to clarify our duties to enable our board members to work with all of, with the three of us to improve the lives of our respective constituencies. In doing so, the legislature restructured the three ethnic councils and brought all of us under one enabling statute, and that's Minnesota Statute Section 15.0145. The duties of our council, as stated in this enabling statute and summarized for the purpose of this presentation, are: one, we were created to advise the legislature and the governor on matters pertaining to Asian Pacific Minnesotans. Two, we were created to advocate on behalf of these Minnesotans within state government. And three, we were created to bridge or connect the gap that exists between these Minnesotans and state government. You may already know that other key provisions in this enabling statute also include a 15-member board consisting of community members appointed by the governor and bicameral and bipartisan legislative members appointed by legislative leadership. There are term limitations for all board members, and the executive director, in this case me, I serve at the pleasure of the Legislative Coordinating Commission. And Mr. Chair, members, you can read about all of our board members on our website. Currently, our representatives from the House are Representative Kathy Herr and Representative Rod Hamilton, and from the Senate, Senator Eric Pratt. Senator Lane was our DFL senator, but she has since retired, and so we're waiting for the next appointee from the DFL caucus of the Senate. At the very end of our enabling statute, Subdivision 8, we are mandated to provide to this committee and its counterpart in the Senate a report on our work in the previous calendar year. We've sent you that report in its electronic form, and you should be getting the hard copy in the next couple of weeks here. During my tenure, our budget has been increased from one biennium to the next, and for this, we thank the legislature and Governors Dayton and Walz. Currently, our biennial budget is slightly more than $1 million. When fully staffed, our team at the Asian Council consists of four permanent FTEs. At times, we have been able to add a temporary part-time staff, specifically a research assistant. At the moment, our council's staff team consists of four policy-oriented and community-driven individuals serving in the capacities of the executive director, the executive assistant slash office manager, the research director, the public affairs and legislative liaison, and our research assistant position is currently vacant. We lost a staff a few months ago. This small team at the council does all of the work of the council. And again, I'll remind members of the committee that we're a state agency seeking to represent 300,000 plus Minnesotans who reside in every single one of Minnesota's 87 counties. And we are set to be the fastest growing minority community in the state of Minnesota, as well as across the nation. Slide number five here, which is depicting the spread of Asian Pacific Minnesotans throughout the state, just simply tells you where we reside. The bar graph on the right informs us of the cities with the highest concentrations. We know that more than 80% of our community reside within the seven county metro area. However, in northern Minnesota, specifically in the cities of Baudette and War Road, reside members of our Lao and Filipino communities. There, they are employed by companies such as Marvin Windows and Polaris. In southern Minnesota, in cities such as Walnut Grove, Marshall, and Worthington, reside members of our Hmong, Karen, and Lao communities. And there, most of them are employed by companies such as Schwann's and JBS. Minnesota's Asian Pacific community, if it's not already apparent, is culturally, ethnically, and linguistically diverse. As I've already pointed out earlier, our council represents the interests of a community that's estimated to be more than 300,000 strong and with ancestry in more than 40 Asian and Pacific Island nations. I sometimes point out that in 2019, the population of the city of St. Paul was 309,000. Our council represents a constituency larger than the entire capital city of Minnesota, though one that is spread across every corner of the state. And I oftentimes bring that up because we are a team of four FTEs attempting to serve a community that size that diverse and spread throughout the state. Broken down by ancestry, the slide in front of you right now tells you what our community looks like. The five largest ancestries are the Hmong, the Asian Indian, the Chinese, the Vietnamese, and the Korean. Minnesota is home to the largest urban concentration of the Hmong in the United States, and home to the largest Karen communities outside of Southeast Asia. The community that prompted the creation of our council has changed significantly since 1985, yet of the needs that existed then, many remain. Our community is one made up of immigrants, refugees, and Minnesota born. And this fact is particularly important where you as legislators are concerned. Minnesotans of Hmong, Vietnamese, Lao, Cambodian, Bhutanese, and Karen ancestry make Minnesota's Asian Pacific community different from those of any other state in that ours is a majority refugee experienced. Now, I'll gently remind the committee that a refugee is an individual who has no choice but to relocate to another country because they face political persecution in their native country. These refugee experienced communities do not have generations of family wealth and stability, a tradition of higher education, home ownership, and established support networks. On the other hand, an immigrant is someone who relocates to another country by choice, seeking economic opportunities that may not be available in their native country. These groups are highly educated, both foreign and native born, financially successful, and have personal, family, and business wealth, and a high percentage of them are homeowners. This group is the backbone of the model minority myth, which is the national narrative that most Americans hear about the Asian Pacific Minnesotan Asian Pacific community. Our council is tasked with supporting a constituency that is the size of a large city, and again, representing drastically different backgrounds. Suffice it to say, there is a divergence of lived experiences among immigrants and refugee experienced households. At our council, we know this all too well, which is why we have an ongoing position in support of data disaggregation. These differences between our immigrant and refugee experienced communities are most evident when we disaggregate data such as median household income and educational attainment. As you can see on the slide in front of you, depicting household income, immigrant households such as those in our Asian Indian community see significantly higher incomes, whereas refugee experienced households such as those in our Hmong Minnesota community see lower incomes. Where educational attainment is concerned, slide 9, where the slide that I have up right now, you can see that the differences are just as stark when we look at educational attainment. Contrary to the model minority myth, you can see on this slide that educational attainment differs dramatically between immigrant communities such as our Asian Indian community, where about 4% have less than a high school diploma. And compare that with our refugee experience communities, such as the Hmong, where almost a third of them have less than a high school diploma. Minnesota Statute Section 15.04145 instructs that our council must assist Minnesota's executive and legislative branches of government to understand the needs and nuances that comprise our state's Asian Pacific populace. With the skilled help of our dedicated team and involved community members, we have accomplished much. Our work is best understood as follows. We advise, we advocate, and we connect. In the calendar year 2020, in our capacity as the advisor, we worked alongside the Department of Health to deploy the statewide pilot program to prevent domestic violence and sexual assault. We responded to legislators' requests for information on Asian Pacific owned businesses when you were taking up legislation that would provide relief to small businesses affected by the rioting in the aftermath of George Floyd's death. In calendar year 2020, in our capacity as the advocate, we launched, convened, and facilitated the Asian Pacific Islander Complete Count Committee, which comprised of more than 50 member organizations representing more than 20 distinct Asian Pacific ancestry groups. These members of the committee then went on to establish 35 sub-complete count committees that were officially recognized by the U.S. Census Bureau and the State Demographer's Office. We also urged the governor and legislators to act on the issue of anti-Asian sentiment and discrimination, And then, of course, we requested administrative changes within specific state government, state departments to ensure that Asian Pacific Minnesotans are informed about the availability of pandemic resources and can successfully access them. In calendar year 2020, in our capacity as the connector or bridge builder, we convened and facilitated meetings between business leaders in the Department of Employment and Economic Development. We convened and facilitated meetings between faith leaders and the departments of health and public safety. We designed and deployed a distance learning survey to help the Minnesota Department of Education better understand how distance learning is playing out in Asian Pacific households. And we deployed our biennial statewide legislative priorities survey. We also continue to work on our emerging communities report, which covers five emerging Asian Pacific communities in Minnesota, the Karen, Karenni, Bhutanese, Guyanese, and Micronesians. Mr. Chair, members, you can read more about these accomplishments of ours in our 2020 report when you do get the hard copies. The work of our council is now more important than ever before. The pandemic has exacerbated existing disparities and created a dramatic rise in anti-Asian sentiment. The demands on our council and therefore the work of our staff have increased exponentially. We recognize, however, that many areas of state government are similarly affected. Therefore, I, in my capacity as executive director and on behalf of the board, ask that you support the governor's recommended 2.8% operating increase over our council's next biennial budget to allow us to continue the critical work that for so many in our community and across the state has been a literal lifeline during these challenging times. In closing, Mr. Chair and members, although the past year has required a dramatic increase in our council's statewide role, we recognize that our lawmakers, including all of you present in this meeting, are under similar, if not exponentially more pressure. On behalf of the board, I thank you for bending to the to meet the needs of Minnesotans during what has been the most difficult years of our lives. And as always, thank you for your time this morning. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that concludes my presentation. And at this point in time, I'm happy to take questions.
Thank you, Ms. Herr. Representative Nash, I see you have your hand up.
Yes, good morning, Ms. Herr. Hope you can hear me.
Yes.
I asked this question of everybody that's been coming in, and we're on your appropriations slide. You're smiling as if you probably already figured out what I'm going to ask.
No.
You know, we're
I'm
we're
just smiling probably, because it's good to see you.
Oh, well, thank you. So we're not far away from the forecast becoming probably reality of a deficit situation. And again, I ask everybody this question. Are you cognizant of what may happen to your budget? And are you making appropriate steps for a possible eventuality of having your budget reduced? Just again, I ask this of everybody. And I think it's likely that we're going to see reductions, and just wanted to make sure that you've been making contingencies for that.
Ms. Herr.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nash, of course, absolutely. I'm just someone who, you know, comes up with plan A, plan B, and plan C, and possibly plan D. And so obviously I've played out several scenarios. You know, I would share with all of you members of the committees that when thinking about our next biennial budget and how that would impact, you know, our strategies and tactics, you know, in consultation with the chair and the vice chair, we decided not to put in a request for a change item at all. And we, you know, we understood that if we could end the session with our budget as intact as possible, that would be in and of itself a miracle. And so my simple answer to your question is yes, we've looked at plans A, B, and C.
Representative Nash.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Herr. I appreciate the thoughtfulness of that. I do believe that we're going to see budgetary tough times, so I'm grateful that you're anticipating having less to do your job with. It's not something that any of us like to hear, but it is something that is a practical reality. So thank you so much.
Representative Mason, unmute yourself, please. Representative Mason, you're muted.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. In Agin, as you your stat show, we do have a number of people. And particularly, I'm thinking it's probably Laotian, Hmong, and Cambodian. And when you're, when you mention the staff that you have, and you've got people that they're different populations, how do you go about representing them or making contact with them? And I can tell you, I mean, there is one church that we have that, and it's still where, and I always thought it was mainly Hmong, where they meet at this church and there's all kinds of services provided. And then I remember at one point, our police chief used to go there to meet with the elders when we had problems with some of the younger population. But then they moved to a temple, and I know there's temples, I think, in Lakeville and Farmington. So how, as I said, it looks like it's a moving target. So how do you go about connecting with those people?
Sure.
And how would I actually be able to do more as well?
Ms. Herr.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mason, that's a great question. And the answer is, consists of several parts. First, I would say that in 2015, when the legislature took up restructuring of the ethnic councils, one of the proposals on the table was to eliminate the boards of the councils. And, our council was the only one of the three ethnic councils to support the legislation that would keep the boards intact. And so I start off with my response to your question, Representative Mason, by talking about the power of our board. Our board is 15 members strong, 11 of whom are appointed from the community. Five of them represent the five largest ancestries. The remaining six represent, each represent another ancestry group under our umbrellas. And so our area of strength lies in our board members. It's always been the case during my tenure that our board members are not just anybody from these communities. They oftentimes, make it through the appointment process because of who they are, because of the breadth and depth of connections they have inside their respective communities, because of the credibility and legitimacy of their reputations as leaders within their respective communities. And so we have a natural connection into our many communities through our board members. But our staff at any, throughout the years have been from our Tibetan, our Hmong, our Cambodian, our Lao, our Asian Indian communities. And then we have consultants that are from our Korean and other communities. And so our staff and our board collectively, come from a good number of our relatively diverse communities. And so there are those pieces. And then there's this piece about simply our reputation as a state agency. When I pick up the phone as executive director and make a cold call to the head of an organization, whether that's a faith organization or a nonprofit organization or a cultural organization, I don't mean to come off sounding as if I am boasting about myself, but it is true that when the executive director of the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans calls anyone in our various communities, they pick up the phone and they listen carefully to what we have to say. And they're open to the fact that we're reaching out to them because we have a statutory responsibility and that we need their help in order to ensure that that the government of the state of Minnesota understands their realities, and to the extent that it is appropriate and possible, that their realities are taken into consideration. And so that's my right off the bat response to your question. You also ask about legislators. You and I have had this conversation before, where if you at any point in time identify that there are organizations or community members within the territorial boundaries of your district and you need to connect with them, that's what you created us for. We are a natural, bridge builder into these groups and into these organizations. And I assure you that there's not been a single time during my tenure as executive director where we have had any kind of difficulty connecting legislators or even local government officials with their API, Asian Pacific Minnesota constituents. And so I give you that. I would be more than happy to also continue this conversation with you offline.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And I see that Representative Carlson has joined us from the other committee. I hope his bill went well over there. I don't see any other hands up. Ms. Herr, thank you for your time. If you can hang around, there might be more questions at the end.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair members.
Next on our list, I have the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage. And Ms. Linda Sloan, if you want, you want to introduce yourself for the record, and then you can proceed with your presentation. And Ms. Herr, can you unshare your screen so that we take your presentation down? Thank you. Thank you. Ms. Sloan. I think you're muted, Ms. Sloan, still.
Great. Linda Sloan, and I'm from the Council of Minnesotans of African Heritage. I'm going to see if I can share my screen. Okay.
There we go.
Okay, perfect.
And if you take down the side, I'll be on the left hand. Yep, that's then full screen.
Okay.
That's then it's easier to read. Otherwise, it cuts it off. Okay. Go ahead, Ms. Sloan.
Wonderful. Again, Linda Sloan from the Council of Minnesotans of African Heritage. Chair Nelson and committee members, I'm excited to be here before you. I just wrapped up my third month, so I am still a newbie, and therefore my presentation will be very short, but I can have subsequent conversations with you afterwards. The mission. Our mission is pretty similar to Sia's and Rosa's, except for we focus on the African heritage people, and we are here to ensure that our people, because I'm a part of that group, can fully take advantage of all of the political, social, economic resources and any of the legislation and procedures of the state of Minnesota. Our charge primarily is to advise the governor and the legislature on African heritage issues. So that is a key one. And I just want to point out that with that statement, we need to understand the issue. So we do have to spend time in the community building relationships so that we can bring that information back to the legislative body. We also advise the governor and the legislature on statutes, rules, and revisions and programs. And that's a key one because every time a decision is made by the legislative body, it can either negatively or positively impact people of color. And so it's important that we are looking and that you guys have that in your mind that as you are developing your plan, that you take that under consideration as well. We serve as a liaison to the federal government, local governments, and organizations. So we are a connector. So we have individuals in the community who come to us with issues as well, or we're out there and we find out the issues. We come back, we have conversations with our state agencies and various organizations, and then partner with the legislative body, you as legislators, to see if we can solve some of the problems. We also implement programs that are designed to solve problems that we are facing. And then we want to celebrate the accomplishments of African heritage people. So for example, our new vice president nationally is of African heritage descent. Who is the African heritage community? We're over 454,000 strong. We are the second largest population group in the state, and that comprises 8% of Minnesota's total population. So it's important to understand that. So if the African heritage group, as in with the other ethnic groups, if we are not doing well, then the state isn't doing well. So it's important that we understand that. And then in terms of the breakdown of the African heritage group, African Americans and the African immigrant population. And why is that important? As you can see here, and as Sister Sia mentioned earlier, we are comprised of 36% African Americans, We have people who did not report which group they fell in. But if you'll note, amongst the African immigrant community, we have various countries. Those countries are coming with different backgrounds. Some have been persecuted, some have had infighting, some have been doing well, but they're coming to this country with different needs. Some don't speak English. And so we have to address the entire African heritage community, not just the African American group. So as one thrives, the other needs to thrive as well. Our legislative agenda and what we are focusing on this year, public safety and policing. Everyone is aware of what happened with George Floyd and what has been going on across the country. But this year, it just became a powder keg that exploded. And so this is a key issue for the state of Minnesota, as well as for the Twin Cities, which is where most of the African and African immigrant population lives. Again, we are all one. And if we don't fix the problems in the ethnic areas, then the entire state is dragged down. We've got to focus on that. There's no secret that healthcare equity is a major issue. And it's been brought to light with COVID. People of African descent are dying at a greater percentage than others. That's important. And we have to look at the systems that are in place and in terms of figuring out why is that the case? You know, is there equal treatment throughout? Education, there's educational disparities. We know that the joblessness rate is different. And then we're also focusing on strong families as well, because we believe that the family is the key to driving prosperity in our communities. So I just put up a couple of priorities: the African American Family Preservation Act, which relates back to strong families, the Crown Act, which relates to being able to wear your hair however you want it in the workplace. We know that we are more likely, and when I say we, the African heritage people are more likely to be sent home. And why is that important? It's important for people to have a sense of dignity and to be able to go into work and feel as if they belong. That's a key, that's right there almost with Maslow's needs. And so it's important that we all can wear our hair however we want. Dignity in pregnancy. We know that Black babies are 2 times as likely to die, and Black women from U.S. born are 3 times as likely to die in childbirth. Increase the Teachers of Color Act. We know that students of color, they learn better when they learn from people that look like them. So those are just a few of our priorities. As I said, because this is my first time and this is actually my first presentation, I wasn't quite certain what all needed to be in here. From a budget perspective, we are again at about $1 million. We have 4 people on staff who are working diligently to try to address some of the major issues that are facing the African heritage community. And yes, we are prepared. I know there was a question about the budget reduction, possible budget reduction. We have taken that under consideration. And fortunately, because there had been turnover, like I said, I've been in my role for 3 months and I just hired a legislative and policy director. So that position had been open for quite some time too. So there was a little bit of money that we were able to capture from that and subsequent funding from previous years. So that in total is who we are. We have a board again of 12. We have 2 seats for Senate representatives and 2 for representatives. And we would love to have someone else join us. Right now, we only have Representative John Thompson on our board. So we would love to have some additional people engaged. I am happy to answer any questions. And if I don't have an answer for it, I will definitely go back And I will also be forwarding our annual report after this meeting. Again, thank you for having me. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Ms. Sloan. And if you want to unshare your screen so we can get back to the, and any questions of Ms. Sloan? And I see Representative Nash's hand up. I think you answered his question already, but.
She beat me to it.
Anticipation. Yeah.
And that's good. Any other questions? Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question has to do with the diversity of the students in our school district, particularly I cover 191, which is Burnsville League and Savage. And there's a lot of diversity in that particular school district. And this goes back a couple of years, but I remember going into one of the schools and they had put some students together who were from different countries, and they did not get along well together. Mm-hmm. And I know you're new to the position, but is that something that your organization would try to deal with, is the confrontation between the various populations that are
Ms. Sloan.
Yes, we are not charged with that, but we do believe in unity and that we are stronger together. I mean, there are many issues that we are facing together as a community, and each group might have, when I say group, under the African Heritage, the African American group, and the African Immigrant group, I'm assuming that that's what you're speaking about. And so we assume that there is some differentiation, but there's a lot of similarities. And so we will be taking a look at that and figuring out some programming and some action to try to take a look at that and bring us closer together so that we can move legislation forward that will benefit all of the African Heritage people.
Okay, thank you. That's just such an unusual situation for people who were born in this country to have to deal with. Thank you so very much.
Yes, you're quite welcome.
It's not a lot different than the Swedes and Norwegians that can't get along. Representative Mason, Representative Greenman, I see you have your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Sloan. I know that, and I think in a lot of our committees, we're talking about the impact that COVID-19 has had on folks, and that it's had a particularly hard and disproportionate impact on Minnesotans of African Heritage. I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about that and potentially some of the things you recommend that we do in response to make sure that we're helping the communities that have been hardest hit.
Okay, can I say it's money? That's always an answer. But we have been hard hit, and primarily because, you know, a lot of our people are first responders. Quite a few of our people are suffering from I don't want to say medical issues, but, you know, and a lot of that has to do with the healthcare and the disparities within that. So hopefully we can work to fix some of that so we can make the African Heritage community healthier because we're going to try to even the playing field. But I think a lot of it is going to be communication also. There is an issue even with the vaccine, whether people trust the vaccine. So we have some people who do, some people who don't, based on history. You know, when you look at the Tuskegee experiment and some things that have gone on, there's been some treacherous experiments that have negatively affected the African Heritage people. So a lot of it is communicating, a lot of it is getting out there, a lot of it is connecting with the thought leaders and the trusted groups. So in terms of what you can do is, one, support any legislation that has a positive effect for healthcare for the African Heritage group, as well as people of color communities. And then also connect with the leaders in your district. who are your constituents and what do they believe in? There's got to be people in your constituent group that believes in equity, that believes that we should all benefit from equitably from the state's resources, that believes in everyone should is entitled to live a healthy, positive life. And if you can find those people, and then also you can connect with me and we can chat further about how we can get you kind of connected to these groups or to people that could positively impact the African Heritage Group.
Thank you. Representative Greenman, I don't see any other hands. I'll give a couple seconds here. Does anybody else have any questions? If not, thank you, Ms. Sloan. If you could hang around, there might be more questions at the end.
I will. Thank you for having me.
And the last presentation we have here this morning is from the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs, Ms. Rosa Took, Executive Director. You want to please identify yourself for the record, and then you can proceed with your presentation.
thank you very much, Chair Nelson and members of the committee. I'm going to share my screen as well.
If you want to identify yourself first, though.
I will.
Yeah.
So for the record, my name is Rosa Took, and I am the Executive Director of the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs. So I'm going to share my screen with you.
Is the technology great?
When it works very well. Sometimes it takes a little time.
We're all learning new this last year.
That's right. Yes, so, well, thank you so much for the opportunity to present this morning with my colleagues of the other councils. It's always great to hear from them. Every time they present, I learn more about Minnesota and also about the great work that each council is doing to serve our respective constituencies. I'd like to use this opportunity to thank Representative Kosnick, who has been reappointed to our council. I have had the chance to work with him during my 4 years in the agency, although I've been only on this position for a little bit more than 1 year. I've been working with him and other council members for the last 4 years, and we have always valued the advice and guidance of Representative Kosnick. So, muchas gracias, Representative Kosnick. So, as you heard from my colleagues here, we are also under the same Minnesota statute. Our council is under the same Minnesota statute, and we serve pretty much the same purpose than the two other ethnic councils with a similar composition. In terms of council members, how they are appointed, who appoints them, and including for legislators. So in addition to Representative Kosnick on our council, Representative Michael Howard has just been appointed as a second member from the House, and Senator Carla Nelson and Senator Patricia Torres-Rey also serve on our council. As I was telling another committee in the Senate, our council is here to advise you, members of the legislature, and also the Office of the Governor and the Lieutenant Governor, and policymakers on issues of importance to Latino Minnesotans. We are a trusted bridge between Latino communities and state government, and as you know, every legislator represents Latinos. So know that we are here for you and your constituents of Latino heritage who contribute greatly to your district's economies. According to Dr. Bruce Corey, who has done extensive work about the economic impact of communities of color and indigenous in the state, Latinos buying power represents $5 billion. And our tax payments add between 600 and $700 million to help pay for schools, roads, human services, public safety, etc. So please count on our council as a nonpartisan source of accurate information about Latino communities in your districts. As an agency, we add value to state government through our singular expertise in the quality and objective analysis we deliver and with the direct connections with the community, as my previous colleagues were explaining. I think that you have received our 2019 and 2020 annual report, where you will read highlights of our work and achievements in the last 2 years. We are a small agency with 6 very dedicated staffs and 2 interns. We are all bilingual and bicultural. We serve more than 300,000 Latino Minnesotans across the state. We represent approximately 5.6% of the total population, and we are one of the fastest growing segments of the population as well. So right now, this is the staff as for this legislative session at the end of the fiscal year. In addition to my work, there's also the work of our legislative team, Samantha Diaz, who oversees the education area. Adrian Magaña, who has just recently been hired to oversee the area of health, particularly he's going to be one of our main contacts during the COVID-19 response, because as others have mentioned, the pandemic has hit our communities very hard and disproportionately, and there is a need for our council to be of service to our communities and in connection between the state and our communities in COVID-19 response. Mr. David Campana is working on the area of economic development. He's serving temporarily, replacing Mr. Felipe Illescas, who has been redeployed to the office of the governor during the legislative session. So we were lucky to hire Mr. Campana to oversee some of the work in the area of economic development. And we have 3 policy fellows or interns, including 1 student worker, Samuel Estes, and 2 interns who are young Latina students. We believe that creating a pipeline for young Latino students who are interested in public affairs is an important role that we can play with our growing youth population in the state, particularly to involve them more in public affairs. And this work is supported by our administrative assistant, Cecilia Roy, who helps us with our operations. So as I was mentioning, we serve a very large population as well, all across the state, in every corner of the state. And we are very diverse, like the other communities that you heard before me. And we have been in Minnesota for many generations. Not every one of us is an immigrant. Actually, according to estimates, 68% of Latinos are born in the US, and many of them in Minnesota. Not all of us are of Mexican origin. Although Mexican Americans represent 70% of Latinos, there are other prominent Latino groups with different ancestries, particularly from Puerto Rico. There are also Salvadorian, Guatemalan, Ecuadorian, and Colombian, and also from other small groups from South America. So our board and our staff represent this diversity. Another important fact is that 90% of children below 18 are US citizens, and they are currently representing 10% of students in K-12 classrooms. But despite our long time presence and contributions to the vitality of the state, as many studies show, particularly during this pandemic, Latinos still face some of the worst disparities in many areas, including education, education attainment and achievement, access to healthcare, employment, housing, and other areas that are important factors for stability, wealth creation, and prosperity for their families. So to tackle and address some of these issues, our staff works on three main interconnected policy areas, as I was explaining before: education, health, and economic development. And in order to prioritize and draft our legislative and policy recommendations, we engage with our communities, particularly in Greater Minnesota, but we also provide other in-house research and analysis focused on our constituents to inform you and the public. I believe that you have received our community report from our community engagement that we did last summer. If not, there's also a link underneath the picture, but I believe that I sent one to each one of you. And last summer, we were able to visit virtually and in person six locations in Greater Minnesota in order to have a clear understanding of the issues faced by the community, which, as I was mentioning, has been greatly and disproportionately impacted by the by this virus. We learned many things. In particular, we learned how resilient communities are, but most of all, how crucial bilingual information and accessing affordable health care are during a public health crisis of this magnitude. So we have been, as you can read, we have been doing some work just to inform the public and policymakers about the different areas and different socioeconomic indicators, including equity impact notes, to analyze bills and policies so that those systems are also improving the lives of Latino Minnesotans. And we have done our part also in being this connection with the community and the state by creating a bilingual webpage on our website to inform communities about different resources available to them. At the same time, we have been participating with other state agencies, educating, informing, advising as to how to reach out to our communities during this COVID response. During this, during last summer, last fall, we also convened two town halls with the governor's office and leaders of the Latino communities. So we were that bridge so that they could bring to their attention concerns and issues going on around workers, particularly in the frontline and essential workers in many rural areas in Minnesota. So some of the work that we've done in the last 2 years have been around the issues that we cover in education and in economic development, and to bring also some financial stability for our community members. Particularly, we've been working in coalition with many organizations, including the councils you heard before me on the Increase of Teachers of Color Act. Also, we were successful in advocating for a grant around regenerative agriculture, in this case for the design of a regenerative poultry industrial park in Albert Lea. We've been also very dedicated to improve the professionalization of medical interpreters in clinics through a medical interpreters bill with the Asian Pacific Council, and also working on consumer protection bills to avoid predatory practices in our communities and extending tax credits for low-income families. I believe that you also received our legislative and policy priorities for the current legislative session. There are very similar issues that we are working on. And as I mentioned, they are very much informed by what community members tell us, but again, we will be working, and we've been already working in strengthening the increased teachers of color and indigenous teachers legislation for this session, also for improving the classroom experiences for English language learners, and programming also that emphasizes the social and emotional learning of kids, which is also important for their academic achievement. Health equity is also one of our main priorities, as you might imagine. One important segment of our communities being essential workers are the ones that have brought the most concerns, not only to our council, but also to other state agencies. And finally, this is how our budget has been allocated for this fiscal year that is almost ending. On more than the majority of our funding goes to employees' compensation, about a third for operating expenses, and 6% for other expenses in our office, so that we can serve our constituents with quality services and be in touch with them all across the state as well. And for the next biennium, this is the 2.7%, that Sia was talking about is also what the governor is recommending in terms of our operating adjustments for the next biennium, so that we can maintain our current level of service delivery. So members, we would like to also ask for your support so that we can retain our current staff and continue delivering these services for all Minnesotans. We believe that our work helps in improving the socioeconomic conditions of the future workforce in the state by eliminating disparities that can only create positive benefits for all Minnesotans. So thank you very much, Chair Nelson and members, for listening to me this morning. I look forward to working with you and responding to any questions that you might have. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Thank you. And questions, and I see Representative Nash has his hand up, and I think I know what the question is going to be. Representative Nash.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Talk, you've seen the assets of other folks who come to present to the committee. Just asking, have you prepared your budget to reflect the likely eventuality of a reduction in budgets across the board? And if you could share with us how you prepared for that. Thank you.
Ms. Talk.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nash, yes, like the other councils, we are aware of potential reductions depending on the forecast, and we are also going to be working with our board in preparing for some of these scenarios.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Talk.
Nash.
You know, for those who think that this is a very tendentious question, I'm not trying to make it so. I'm just trying to make sure that everybody understands that when that budget forecast comes out, there will have to be reactions virtually across the board. And, you know, it's one of the unfortunate things that's happened as a result of COVID and the budget, but just trying to make sure that everyone who does get appropriations recognizes that it's going to have to be dealt with and is preparing ahead of time for that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Nash. And Representative Nash, just along that line too, last March when this all started and we went into lockdown, I did have a conversation with Commissioner France at that time. And my message to him was that small cuts back in March could alleviate huge cuts that we might have to make in January if the budget went like they were predicting. And across the board, I think the governor's office and the governor's staff and all the branches have done that and been judicious about that. So, but Representative Freak, agreement. I see you have your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I probably could ask this to all of you. And as a voting rights lawyer who did a lot of work on the census in my previous life, I would love to, I know that all of the councils did a lot of work to make sure that Minnesota had a fair and accurate count in some of the worst conditions I think we've seen with the citizenship question and everything else. I'm wondering if you could talk just a little bit about, I think the census is gonna play a key role in how we distribute resources and redistricting, and just talk a little bit about the work that you did to make sure that we had an accurate count.
Ms. Tak.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenman, our council was not necessarily coordinating all the Latino complete count committees like the Asian Pacific Council. The communities themselves organized and also we're doing pretty intensive work on the ground to make sure that all of our communities were counted. We played a role mostly more at the macro level, making sure that there were some ordinance passed in some cities, particularly in Duluth, so that the census workers were able to access buildings and apartments so that to make sure that everyone would be counted. So we are, we were very worried during the year, of course, because there were so many changes in the census, in the Census Bureau, including the question, as you mentioned, regarding citizenship and any other last minute changes. And so we were a little, and the pandemic and the hesitancy of people for many reasons to respond to the census, but we need to wait and hear from what the census data, the Census Bureau releases this spring in terms of those findings. So I will have to give credit to much of our Latino leaders and organizations that really were able to pull together with other multicultural effort this huge endeavor. So I think that to tell you, I don't have the right answer right now, but definitely that's something that we can bring back to you in terms of how our communities were counted.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Greenman brings up a good point. I think it's important for us to recognize the role of all the councils isn't to be out an advocacy organization, a campaign group. Their main priority and mission is to advise the legislature on policy. Certainly there's a good opportunity for discussion about the citizen question and such. But I think Ms. Tok, I appreciate that the council wasn't on the forefront of organizing and doing some of that stuff, but being more of a resource. So I appreciate your answer to that. But I think it's important to highlight what I try to do as a board member is that keep them on mission, my board, that they are to advise us as legislators and state government on why different policy impact their communities and the states. And so I appreciate that. Representative Nash eloquently and consistently brings up the point about our budgets, and I think it's important. I thank him for that. And I think the Latino Council is prepared to do that. I've appreciated my time on the council and look forward to continuing to work with you, Ms. Tok, and the other councils. And finally, I would compliment the councils on their work jointly on helping to reduce the achievement gap and their efforts in highlighting that issue that I think is critical to Minnesota. We may differ in our approach a little bit on how to solve that achievement gap, but I do compliment the councils for highlighting that and working with the legislature as one of your main priorities. So thank you.
Ms. Herr, you have your hand up. Did you want to answer that question also? You need to unmute yourself. There we go.
Mr. Chair, to Representative Greenman's question about the census work. I would say Representative Greenman that, you know, we understood marching into the into 2020 that Asian Pacific Minnesotans are identified as an undercounted group in historical census data, and that they live in hard to count census tracts as identified by the U.S. Census Bureau. And so we launched and convened the statewide API Complete Count Committee in November of 2019. And between November of 2019 and October, November of 2020, we convened this group once a month. And that work was critical because recall that in our enabling statute, we serve as not only the advisor to the legislative branch of government, but to the executive branch of government as well. And it was in launching the API Complete Count Committee that we, you know, created a structure by which we could actively advise the state demographer's office and other offices within the executive branch when it came to how to best conduct outreach into our communities, how to design languages that would make sense within the fabric of the lives of the community, the Minnesotans that we seek to advise and advocate on behalf of. And so I would give you that. If we hadn't done that with all of the, noise out there about, the dangers of engaging in the census, our communities were quite vulnerable to not participating. And so as executive director of the Asian Pacific Council, I would just make sure that it's understood by policymakers that we were not, acting as an activist, that we were in fact, actively advising state government, particularly through the and within the capacity of the executive branch, and that we did that because we understood very well the strengths and the challenges of our community, and obviously the barriers to participation, whether that's showing up at the Capitol or participating in the decennial census.
Representative Greenman.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I really appreciate that. And I think to tie together, I think Representative Nash's comments, we know that the investment in making sure we have a full count is actually a really important economic investment in our cities, our counties, and our state, given how federal funding comes down through the census. And so I just really appreciate all the work that you all have done in making sure that, we tell the story of this diverse and beautiful state. And also that cities, counties, and the state have the resources they need and deserve given our population. So I really appreciate that work that everyone did.
Thank you. Any further questions? Give it a couple seconds here. I don't see any hands jumping up on my screen. Members, we oversee the budgets of these four entities, and going forward, but also these are a resource for us. If we have questions of how legislation we're proposing is going to affect different communities, communities that are different than ourselves, I'd encourage you all to reach out to them and ask these and use the resource that we have, because that's the information they have is there for all of us. And members, the little joke I made about Swedes and Norwegians, as none of these groups, as they've all have said, they're very diverse members of their groups. They're very diverse within themselves, and that's their job, is to work to make sure that they hear those messages from all those diverse populations that within their individual groups, and bring that to us so that we have that information so we can do the best we can and make the smartest decisions we can going forward. Again, any further questions? None. Members, there aren't any further questions. Our next meeting is Thursday, February 11th. We have two bills scheduled to be up, Representative Moeller's House File 75 and Representative Freiberg's House File 396. Members, if there are no further questions or any comments from anyone, I want to thank the members of the executive directors from the four councils for being at the meeting today. And members, with that, we are adjourned.